You're listening to The Point. Legendary singer-songwriter Judy Collins is coming to Cape Cod to perform at the Harwich Cranberry Arts and Music Festival. Brian Morris caught up with the award-winning artist yesterday.
Well, Judy Collins, thanks so much for joining me on The Point.
My pleasure.
And now, many people know you primarily as a folk artist, Judy, but you actually began your musical career playing classical piano. I wonder if you could just start by talking a little bit about those early years. And also, what inspired you to eventually, you know, branch out into other types of music?
Well, I was a classical pianist, but I also, you know, I sang in the choirs and I sang in the school shows, and I starred in Snow White when I was 11, singing "Someday My Prince Will Come," and played Mozart and Debussy, and I had a real training, so. I was lucky, and eventually I found folk music when I was 15 and switched gears, but it all had to do with learning how to play and sing and perform and be up to the job, I guess you would say.
Yeah, so, I mean, did you do classical concerts when you were younger? That's a lot of work to train classically like that.
I played with a symphony when I was 13, playing a Mozart concerto.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was kind of in there with the big kids.
Right, right. And then what was it that sort of made you decide to go get into music like folk music?
I was supposed to be practicing one day, and I was about 15, I guess. And I heard a song on the radio, and it was Barbara Allen, and it was sung by Joe Stafford, and I was completely stunned. And I said, that's what I want to do.
So you did, and when did you, was that about that time when you started playing guitar?
Yes, got my father to get me a guitar, and that was it.
Now, you sort of came up during that golden era that we always hear a lot about of folk and the Greenwich Village scene in the early 60s, and that must have been a pretty incredible time down there, all that creative energy with people like, you know, Dylan and Phil Oakes and Tom Paxton and people like that. I wonder if you could talk about what it was like to sort of be around then and be in that scene.
Well, it was amazing. You know, I was in the right place at the right time, I guess. It was a remarkable time, and I just went with it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it, and I did it, and I worked hard at it, and I got a lot of breaks. You know, I think I was in the right place at the right time. I didn't write any songs, but I had a recording contract, so everybody wanted me to record their songs because I had a recording contract. A lot of them didn't, and so that was part of why I was able to find some incredible songs that people wanted me to record.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very exciting time, political, social. It was a froth of talent here in New York.
Sure. And how did the recording contract come about if you weren't writing songs at that point? How did that work back then?
Well, I was a performer already. I was on the road singing from 1959. I started being hired to come and sing at the clubs, and that's where I got my start, and that's where I was discovered by Bob Gibson and then by the president of Elektra. When I got to New York, he came to see me and said, "You're ready to make an album." This is 1961,
mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of mostly traditional songs at that point that I was doing, and so I was in the right spot at the right time doing the right kind of songs, I guess.
Yeah, and how did the recording of Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now come about? When was that, how did you first become aware of that song?
I was sound asleep one night in my bed on the Upper West Side in New York, and it was 3 in the morning, and my friend Al Cooper called me, and he put Joni Mitchell on the phone, and she sang me Both Sides Now.
Really? Wow.
And I said, I'll be right over.
I can see why you would say that with a song like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had just discovered her as an up-and-coming songwriter and decided...
Well, she was a fan of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And she used to come... She had a crush on the drummer. And so she'd show up at the clubs, and she said she wrote songs. So he followed her home, and she sang him a song, and he said, I'm going to call Judy Collins.
Wow. Was that your first charting single, Judy, or was that the first hit song you had?
Well, I had... That was on my 7th album, and my 6th album had
all the first songs of Leonard Cohen's that I recorded. So things were cooking along. And, you know, they said it was overnight, but it wasn't. I was working very hard.
Yeah, it never seems to be. You hear a lot about that, but it almost never is. A lot of times people just seem like they work for years behind the scenes and nobody ever knows about
it. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, in 1975, there was Send in the Clowns, and which was a huge hit for you. And I'm just wondering, how did that come about? How did you become aware of that wonderful Stephen Sondheim song?
Well, it was another coincidence. My friend Nancy Bacall, who was best friends with Leonard Cohen, well, we discovered each other in 1966, and I had recorded his songs, and he'd introduced me to his best friends, and among them was Nancy. And Nancy called me in 1973, and she said, I was sitting in this very apartment where I'm sitting right now, and she said, I know you're looking for material for your next album, and I have just to say, I just recorded Amazing Grace, had a very big hit with that, mm-hmm. and I was writing a lot of my own songs, but I was sort of struggling along, not knowing what to do next, and she said, I'm going to send you over this album, which is a cast recording of Little Night Music, mm-hmm. and that's how I found Send in the Clowns.
Wow. And, of course, that was a huge hit back then. I was just thinking earlier today, you know, it's really kind of hard to imagine a song like that becoming a hit today, I think, on today's
well,
pop charts.
Well, it's interesting because it is the last song from a musical to become a top 10 charting song.
Wow.
And it charted top 10 twice. It charted top 10 in 1975. When that album came out, and then it charted again in 77. So it's very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems like a lot of the playlists are so much more restrictive these days. And I wonder, do you think that maybe that's, you know, the fact that there hasn't been another song like that? Is it just people have less of a taste for kind of experimentation?
I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea. I am not the person to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Tell me about when you started your own record label and what prompted you to do that. I think you were on Elektra for about, 30 years or so?
Long, long time. Did a lot of other projects and fooled around with a lot of other, you know, heads of record companies and was told, you know, they blow smoke up your you-know-what, and then they don't follow through. And I was sick of that, and I just decided in 1999, actually, that I was going to start my own label, which I did. And it was great because I got to know a lot of new talent and helped them out, I think, in a lot of ways, and also really established, I think I continued to establish my own relationship with new writers and young writers, which I always had, but it kind of cemented that. And then I found people like Amy Spies and Kenny White, and my first signing was a wonderful writer who was very fundamental to the rock and roll and blues background. He was a fantastic artist. So I found a lot of people, and then through that process, I also found Ari Hest, who's been a big plus in my own life because I'm writing songs with him, and wrote an album with him that got a Grammy nomination, which I hadn't had in 40 years. Wow. So, you know, it was a good thing to do.
Does the sort of record executive aspect of it, was that kind of a tough thing to do after being an artist all those years, or did that?
No. I've always been interested in the business. I like being aware of everything that's going on. I like to participate in it. I know that it takes a team to do anything. So the record label was just another extension of all the things I'd been doing all along.
Hmm. And now you've also been a very, you know, dedicated social activist throughout your career. I wonder if you could talk to me about some of the, you know, the issues that you feel are really important today, what you may be involved with as we head into 2018. What are some of the things you've been involved with in the past and things close to your heart?
Well, I think everybody has concerns about what's going on in the country, and I think whatever we do, we have to take actions and keep resisting. I have spent the last 25 years since the suicide of my son working in the mental health area a lot. I've written a lot of books about mental health. I do a lot of speaking engagements about mental health. And quite frankly, I think what we're looking at nowadays is a rupture of mental health issues all over the map, not only with our president, but with our congresspeople and our entertainers and everything else. You know, mental health goes right to the core of who you are and how you behave.
Mm-hmm. And so you'll continue to be active in the coming years, I suppose, right?
I hope
to say
so.
The least.
Depends on whether I wake up tomorrow morning. That's all, you know, that's not up to me.
Now, you're going to be coming to Cape Cod here, performing on, I think it's the 19th here in Harwich. Are you going to be playing solo, and is there anything special planned for that particular show?
I think Ari's on that show, and he'll be opening for me, so that'll be fun. And I'll do some Christmas hits and a couple of duets with him, and we'll have a good time.
Great, great. Well, that's going to be great. Now, am I right? You're going to be going out on tour with Stephen Stills in sometime in 2018. Is there anything you can?
Yes, we're gonna. We just came off a 50 show tour, and we're going to be going out in May and June of 2018.
Wait, just the two of you? We have a band behind you, or?
Oh yeah, we do.
The whole nine yards.
Now, wonderful band.
Yeah, you tour an awful lot, I guess, throughout the year. What would you say is the most rewarding thing about touring and the most grueling?
I happen to love it, so I'm not the person to talk to about its disadvantages, because life is not easy. It doesn't matter what you do for a living.
Right.
It's not the easiest thing, and a troubadour has a hard time, but I love it. It's wonderful for me.
Yeah. You've written a number of books. How many all told? And I wonder if you could talk about a little bit about some of the books that you've written in the past few years.
I've written a number of memoirs, a lot of them about the issue. I wrote a novel as well. My last book is about my eating disorder, so I talk about alcoholism and eating disorders and the scope of what I know about what we're allergic to. And so that has been quite an adventure. I wrote a number of chapters about diet gurus through history, which was fascinating to do that research. And, you know, the food issue is just like the alcoholism issue, except that people don't understand that it is an allergy, and that when we eat sugar, grains, flour, corn, and wheat, it sets up an allergy and creates not only overweight, but underweight and bulimia and anything that has to do with I want to lose 10 pounds in the next 10 days or, you know, I'm throwing up and I can't stop. So that was the purpose of my book, was to educate.
Hmm. What sorts of reactions have you gotten from people who've read it?
They love it.
Judy Collins, I want to thank you so much for being with me on The Point this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, and I hope you have a great day and a great holiday.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Judy Collins will perform at the Harwich Cranberry Arts and Music Festival on December 19th at 7:30. We'll have more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Coming up after a break, we visit a chicken coop in Barnstable and learn to speak chicken.